Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Welcome to Criminalia. I'm Maria Tremarki, and in this episode, we're saying ahoy to pirate season.
And I'm Holly Fry. Let's recap for a moment. If you have listened to shows during our previous seasons, you have learned a lot about our beloved arsenic, and stories of the lady poisoners who frequently used it. And then next, we put a spotlight on the different types of stalkers. And then we turned that spotlight on imposters. And in this most recent season, we told the tales of pirates throughout history. If you have not been with us in previous seasons, welcome. And also, we have a tradition that we are about to enact today. At the end of each season, Maria and I pick our favorite shows from the season and our favorite cocktails and mocktails to share during this, the final episode.
As we do, we spent this season looking at whether or not the stories of plundering pirates could look different through a modern eye. But, I mean, actually, who are we kidding? When it comes to a typical pirate, we didn't really expect their crimes to improve just over time.
It is very easy to get caught up in the idea of a pirate's life. There are a lot of stories celebrating the romantic notion that sailing those high seas was all about excitement and full of adventure. Just look at stories like Treasure Island, for instance, written by Robert Louis Stevenson. If you're not familiar, that is the tale that introduced us to peg-legged and parrot-loving pirates and their quest for buried treasure.
This romanticism of piracy reminded us of the episode that highlighted Stede Bonnet. We bring him up specifically because Bonnet is a great example of someone who was really chasing that dream. He was a wealthy landowner who left it all behind to have a more adventurous life. As it turns out, though, he bought that new life rather than putting in the time as pirates actually did. In his new life, we found, as we learned about him, his crew didn't respect him at all, and they defected to Blackbeard's ships. We also learned he spent a lot of time hiding in a stateroom on his own ship, where he kept a personal library. It was certainly different from his former life, but it probably was not what he expected.
Most men and women on the seas did not have a background like Bonnet. Some turned to piracy for the money, some for the adventure, and some to escape terrible situations. Some pirates were bloodthirsty, others greedy, and some, like Jeanne de Clisson, were in it just for revenge. If you remember her story, she spent 13 years seeking revenge for the execution of her husband. 13!
That's a long time. Another piratey fact we can take away from this season is that many were captured and tried and executed by hanging. That was the pirate way. But some pirates made enough money to retire from piracy and become wealthy merchants. A few became so successful or memorable or even infamously brutal that their names carried through the centuries and they're still recognized after all this time. One of the problems, though, with uncovering the real stories of pirate legends is that there isn't always much historical evidence about many of them, especially if they were never captured or never put on trial. If there is evidence of their lives, the stories often, but not always, have been embellished. But embellished or not, though, they did have interesting stories.
And among the pirates, we did definitely have our favorites, and we're sure you do too. So tell us the stories and drinks that you liked best on social media with the hashtag Criminalia. We would love to know which ones we have in common. But let's start now with our top three shows. Maria, who'd you love this season?
It was difficult to narrow it down to three. I'm not starting them in any particular order. Our final episode was Charles Vane. We weren't originally going to talk about Charles Vane, but when he started to show up in other people's stories, I thought it was really interesting to do an episode on him. Also, I really liked that we learned that even though he was a really skilled captain, he was actually pretty much a coward who would not take on ships that he knew that he couldn't fight, a coward at his execution, because apparently he really tried to get out of that. He was a scallywag, he was a scoundrel, he was an outlaw, he was everything that we want from pirates in the golden age of piracy. But I would say that above all, it was because of his creeping in and out of the stories of others.
Yeah, I mean, prolific enough that he really does pop up in almost any Golden Age story.
Did you have any thoughts on Charles Vane in your top three, or did he not make it to your list?
Chazzy, as I like to call him, did not make my list.
Chazzy is the perfect nickname for him, and I really, really hope that when he was like partying with Blackbeard off the coast of North Carolina, they called him that.
Nobody did, but in my heart, they did. My own revisionist history. The first one that I will mention is one that we already talked about in the intro here, which is Stede Bonnet. And here's why. It has very little to do with him specifically as a pirate himself. But we talk, and we even had an episode, and I almost picked it, about fictional pirates. And we have talked throughout the season about how romanticized pirates have become. You know, how the myths have really kind of become what people accept as pirate lore, even though it's not really accurate to what most of these people were like.
Right.
And Stede Bonnet is a good exemplification of the fact that that was happening concurrently with the Golden Age of piracy. That's not a new problem. That's not a situation where history changed our view. There was enough romanticizing of pirates in the 18th century that he was like, oh man, that sounds dreamy.
Right. So I actually have on my honorable mentions, Stede Bonnet. And I also have in my honorable mentions, fictional pirates who were considered real. And I see the connection here. And I picked Stede as my honorable mention because he seemed to me to be perhaps the most unpiratey pirate that we talked about this season. The idea that he didn't actually perform any pirate duties, that he purchased everything to get into the world and perhaps was having a midlife crisis when he decided to do this, all landed him on my top five, I would say, not my top three.
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't, if he had really thought it through, want a life of piracy. He wanted all of the luxury and the trappings of society that he was fortunate enough to have access to. He just wanted them on a boat. So he could have just booked a cruise.
Or buy the boat. You know, that's fine. You know, just cruising up and down the North Atlantic.
Yeah, bless his heart. He was cosplaying piracy and thinking it was going to work out.
Okay, so moving on from Stede. I really liked the Halloween episode that we did, which was Pirate Hunters. It was mostly because of our exploration of how a pirate becomes a pirate hunter. And as it turns out, you're a pirate. But I think I went into it thinking, well, how much does the Navy provide versus how much do pirates provide when they're hunting other pirates? My conclusion was, if you're a pirate, you would sell out another pirate. And it was just a really fun episode to do on legal, and I'm going to put that in air quotes, versus outlaw piracy.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the ideology. And I'm sure this was part of what led Stede Bonnet to think it was pretty great, was that there was a certain degree where you did not have to feel a responsibility to anyone else but yourself.
Yes.
I see the appeal of that. Sure, the trappings of life can get a little weighty and exhausting at times, but who would want that job?
I know.
Not me.
A pirate who gets paid to do it, perhaps, since he wants the job.
Maybe, but only until somebody else turns on him.
Are you saying it's lawless among pirates?
What?
No. What?
What?
Stand up guys.
My next one, I don't know that I would say it's super fun, but I really like it as a story, is Rachel Wall.
Yeah, she was not what I thought she was going to be.
Right. I mean, she's another one that's emblematic of people that found themselves in situations where they're like, well, here's what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite taken by the fact that pretty much everything we know about her is based on that one document.
Yes.
That she put together at the end of her life, knowing she was going to be executed. So we don't have verification on it. We just have to kind of take her at her word on most of it.
Right.
But boy, she sure packed a lot into that document, which wasn't that long. It's not a super long read, but there are a lot of details crammed in there.
I did not actually have her as one of my honorable mentions, so I'm going to move on to my third choice, which was Henry Every. I picked him because I thought he was really a great example of how pirate legends grow throughout that person's life and afterwards. We hear these things about Henry's life that just seem preposterous. You know, there was that whole instance after the plundering the treasure ship where maybe he had married this princess, or maybe, I forget exactly, maybe he had started his own nation. All of these things that people had made up about him, when really he was a person who managed to escape for, what, 2 years, I think he was a pirate. I just felt like his legend made him infamous more than his actions did.
Right. He actually seemed pretty shrewd about handling himself, doing the jobs he was doing. I'm saying jobs very loosely,
yes,
obviously.
Yes. But
and then getting out and being like, all right, well, now I'm going to fall back into one of my other names.
Exactly. He had like, I don't know, 10, 12. I remember making a joke about how he also collected names. He was really quite something. But I like that when he made his big treasure heist, he got out. He was smart enough to get out at his peak.
Yeah, which very few.
No, I think we've seen very few have not.
So.
Yeah, no. I could have more. Let's do one more, Shep.
Right. So I had mentioned Rachel Wall already, who I do also love. We didn't mention in this wrap-up that she's, you know, the North American woman pirate,
yes.
Essentially.
Yes,
right?
Essentially, yeah.
And my third choice is also a woman, and I bet it will not surprise you one bit. It's Jeanne de Clisson. I mean, she's got the whole story.
Years. 13
she's,
years.
She's angry. She loved her husband. She's got great style. She's like a rocket of just fervor and anger and ambition in terms of how much she took on and how much she did. So I love everything about that story. I obviously don't like that she lost her husband.
Right.
Let me just say, I don't think I would want to time travel back and really hang with any pirates, realistically. I don't have romanticism about it. I'm like, that seems, you know, unclean and kind of unpleasant. But she might be the one that I would be like, I would love to make you a cocktail, ma'am.
Come on in. I did not have her as my top three, but in my honorable mentions, I did have Grace O'Malley. And one of the reasons for that is because she just seemed like such an incredible badass her entire life. Some of the other women we talked about may not have started out in a pirate family. I felt like Grace was truly her entire life a pirate. One little element that stood out to me about her in everything that we researched and talked about was that when she met Queen Elizabeth, she refused to bow because she felt she too was a queen. As soon as I learned that, I was like, badass.
Right? I mean, she was kind of pirate royalty.
And I don't blame her for feeling that way at all. She didn't pick the Queen of Ireland. She was the Queen of Ireland. No. Oh, Grace.
Gracie. She'd probably hate me for saying that.
Let's talk about drinks. What do you have first, Miss Mixologist?
Well, I'm going to have some duplication here because my first favorite drink of the season was also from the Rachel Wall episode. It's the Hanged Woman.
She's one of my two honorable mention drinks. That's fantastic. I love when we overlap.
So for anyone that doesn't remember, the Hanged Woman is a splash of pumpkin syrup in a chilled coupe, and then 3 ounces of hard cider and 3 ounces of champagne. If you want to do the mocktail, you use non-alcoholic cider and a ginger ale. I cannot tell you the number of times I have made this drink since we did that episode. For myself, for my friends. We had people over for Halloween brunch, and I made a batch of it, and it was amazing. It's just delicious, and it hasn't stopped being delicious for me. You know, I'm not like, oh, no. Sometimes you try a thing and you go, oh, this is delicious. And you drink a bunch and then you're kind of done.
Right. You're over for like a good 5 years.
I'm like, we always got to have champagne chilled in case I want a hanged woman at all times. Please have it ready.
I made a note to myself about the hanged woman, not just how, you know, tasty it was, but the pairing of the hard cider and champagne gets you way drunk. So that's also part of that drink. Quick to drunk.
Right. We talked during the Charles Vane episode about how champagne as a vehicle for other spirits is just a little bit, you got to be careful with it, at least in my experience.
It accelerates things for me.
Me too. What was your first drink?
Okay, so my first drink was the Horned Helmet from Lagertha. We've already talked, I know, that I am not a fan of putting whiskey and citrus together, which this recipe is whiskey, lemon juice, violet syrup, a little club soda on the top. I also loved, and I think this is because the whiskey and citrus issue had been taken out, the mocktail version of this drink, which is steeped black tea, lemon juice, violet syrup, and I did use a dash of bitters in mine, but the syrup makes it this wonderful, beautiful color. It's so refreshing from lavender, which I find pops up a lot. Violet does not. Lavender often makes me think, these days, it makes me feel like I'm drinking cleaning products. And so it was a very nice change to have a different flower. I also live in a place, and this is important for people who don't live in a city. I live in a place where violet syrup will never be found on any store, any aisle. So I looked up how to make it. It's super easy. So if you are in the same situation as me, trust me, do it. It is a showstopper in this drink. I very much love it.
Most syrups that you would use in drink making are so easy to throw together.
Absolutely.
It's usually like one part sugar, one part water. Add whatever the flavoring is, let it simmer till everything dissolves, strain off any herbal bits, and you're golden.
Right. If you can make simple syrup, you can make this.
Yes. So easy. I'm glad you picked that one. I looked at it for a while, and then I was like, I got to make cuts, because my cocktail list was long this time.
I had to make cuts, too. This was a great season for cocktails. I actually went back and forth as to whether or not this one should show up on my list because of the whiskey lemon juice issue. But here it is, the mocktail.
My second one, again, I'm a duplicator. It's the powdered wig.
Powdered wig.
Listen, I'll just say up front, I'm going through a flip phase. I don't know what's going on there. I want my eggy drinks in abundance right now. It's just a thing I'm in the middle of. I'll get over it eventually. So for anyone that does not recall the powdered wig, it is 2 ounces of vanilla brandy, 1 ounce of simple syrup, 1 whole egg, and you shake it in a shaker until that egg has completely incorporated and become really frothy. There's actually a great moment while you're shaking where you kind of feel it happen, like it has been aerated enough that it has stopped being a sloshy liquid and it starts to be almost a foam that you're just like, am I still shaking a fluid? And then you can top it with nutmeg. We always have to say, like, wash your eggs.
Right.
For pregnant women in particular, uncooked eggs can be a little tricky, but you probably shouldn't be drinking a flip if you're a child anyway.
Good point there. Yes.
Look, I'm not here to judge, but I want everyone to be safe.
Exactly.
So, I love a flip. If you wanted to do the mocktail version instead of that vanilla brandy, which... Again, that's part of my problem, is that I have a vanilla cognac and vanilla brandy situation also brewing. So this is like the perfect drink for me right now. But if you're doing non-alcoholic, you just use a low sugar apple juice in lieu of that brandy or cognac and you're all set. It's a good one, I feel like, for this time of year, for those of us that celebrate any winter holidays. It's kind of like a a variation on eggnog that's not as heavy, but you still get that frothiness and that velvety mouthfeel. And I just, again, I love a flip right now. I just love them.
I have not, to be honest, tried any drink that has egg in it because I also have an egg in my drinks problem. Maybe this is why I only have two things that I like to drink.
You're the reverse of me. I'm like, put weird things in. Right? And you're like, no, thank you.
No, what are you doing? That nutmeg sprinkle on the top is all that I'm going to like. I don't really. But if you handed me one, I would try it. But I won't make it for myself because eggs. So my next one actually matches up with one of my favorite shows, The Pirate Hunters. So this drink is The Betrayer. I picked it because I loved that there were two Sriracha drinks in this season. So it became the choice between The Betrayer from The Pirate Hunter show and The King's Pardon, I believe, was Charles Vane's. And The Betrayer won out because of the red ice cubes that put on the show in your glass as they're melting.
Yeah.
Certainly a plus for me. In addition, I do like a good daiquiri and like an old school daiquiri. And I'm not judging the frozen daiquiris that you drink on the beach because I've had plenty of those in my life too. The bitters, the red food coloring, it all worked together with, and I think this drink had white rum, simple syrup, lime juice, perhaps, and a little club soda on the top.
Yes, it is white rum, lime juice, simple syrup.
Right.
Just and a kiss of club soda on it, not very much.
Right. And the mocktail switches that out for, I believe, was it almond syrup that you did in that? That's off the top of my head. So yeah, the seeping of the red tendrils into the drink, plus the heat that you could get from your sriracha, depending on how much you put in, I loved.
I like that one too, just as, you know, who doesn't enjoy a special effect drink?
Right? I never get one. So like when that happens, that's always great. There's never any like red wine special effects.
Yeah. And it that was because we were doing that one also at Halloween time.
Yes.
It kind of fit. I wanted something that had that, you know, seeping evil blood look to it. But I will say I was delighted that it worked as well as it did, because you never know. In my head, I usually make a plan before I try anything. I'm not like, I don't know, just try this in while I'm sitting there. I usually like it comes to me pretty clearly what avenue I'm going to travel in terms of like, okay, these are the spirits I want to use. This is thematically how I want to talk about it and think about it. And then this is going to be the twist on this or whatever. That one I was like, I kind of had it all in my head and I made it and it worked really well the first time. And I was like, well, bravo, me.
Good for you.
It is a fun one. That one was on my honorable mentions list. As you said, I like a classic Dak.
Right?
They're tasty and very bright. And having that heat on it changes completely what you think a daiquiri is, even if you're thinking of an old school one. So I'm always down for a little mucking about.
It gave it a little extra, which was super nice.
That transitions nicely to my very favorite of the season, which is, again, I'm the duplicator. It's Red Sails. It's Jeune de Clisson's.
I had her on honorable mention as well. So, yeah.
That one was 1.5 ounces of cinnamon whiskey, 1/2 ounce Grand Marnier, 1/2 ounce simple syrup, 1/2 ounce of lemon juice, and then that is topped with cranberry juice. All of those flavors come together in a way that, like, the cinnamon is just sort of this grounding note.
Mm-hmm.
I know sometimes when you drink cinnamon whiskey, it's a little harsh, but because of all the other elements, it really smooths that out. And it just, you're like, oh, this feels festive, yet not assaultive to my palate in any way. It's very delicious.
I also really liked that it immediately conjured her ship, her black ship with her red sails. And there it was, just, she was yummy.
That's another one that I have made many times since we did the episode. So
I always find that interesting, what becomes on your list of go-tos.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, the Hanged Woman has been the most made at our house. Again, because that is an easy one to put together for entertaining as well. So that's part of why, in terms of sheer volume served, the Hanged Woman was the one that I made the most. Red Sail, because you can do it for entertaining purposes. So in terms of sheer volume, I have made the most of that. Red Sails, in terms of ones I have made just for myself, mm-hmm. when I'm like, I would like to have a cocktail with dinner. That's the one that I go to.
Nice. My last drink was actually a little bit surprising to me. And it was also, again, one of my favorite episodes. And this, again, is Henry Avery, the King of Pirates. The drink was called, I believe, the Vanishing Pirate. It's a combination of ginger with strawberry, but it was the elderberry that I found so aromatic and refreshing. And it's such a great drink for not this time of the year. It's a great summertime cocktail. You had put, I believe, in your recipe, strawberry vodka, like if available, or I would highly recommend the strawberry vodka. It would be good without it, but it brings to the table with the elderberry this sweetness and brightness, and it all works very well together. Plus, I'm a big fan of ginger beer. So this recipe had elderflower cordial, strawberry vodka or vodka, ginger beer, mocktail, just minus the vodka. Was the ingredients for mocktail minus the vodka?
You don't do the vodka, but you muddle the
strawberries,
the
instead.
Syrup and the strawberries, yeah. together, and then pour ginger beer over that.
Which is all excellent, both drinks.
Both very yummy. You know what's funny is I took this off my list, and now as you talk about it in a manner that waxes so rhapsodic, I'm like, oh gosh, maybe. Now I want to, maybe that one should have been on my list.
I did have a top four, which had to do with another flowery type of thing. And because it was hibiscus, I wanted to put it on my list so badly. And it was four women made for Anne Bonny, Mary Read, Martha Farley, and Mary Critchett. But I didn't want to put it on the list at the end because I didn't want to put it on the list for a single ingredient. And that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy the drink. But it just right. didn't make it into top three. Hibiscus. Oh my gosh, I love it.
I have two honorable mentions in my cocktail list. And these are also ones that I have made several times since we recorded them. The first is Teodos Curse.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the one that combined ouzo, vodka, and lemonade for like a strange licorice lemonade. For anyone that thinks those two things don't go together,
try
just
it.
Just give it a whirl.
Yeah.
They surprisingly dovetail one another really nicely. Yeah, I have made that several times as well. And now I'm thinking about schedule another time to make one. Because it's also super easy. That one's a quickie to throw together.
And there's not a lot that comes out, at least that I've noticed, with a licorice forward flavor, unless you just have ouzo. So adding the lemonade to it was a really nice change.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of all of the licorice things.
Me too.
You know, I love a little anisette. Obviously, I love absinthe. I love ouzo. I know that's not for everyone, which is why we don't have a lot of licorice forward.
Yes. It's for me. Like,
if you feel like you are adventurous and willing to try new things, and you're a little scared of this one, I just would encourage you to give it a whirl, because shockingly refreshing could be its subtitle. My last honorable mention, and this was the one that I think when we recorded it, I said, oh, this is my favorite right now, and we'll see where it lands. And it still is way up there, which mm-hmm. was The Bad-Tempered Woman.
Oh.
Which is the Saeed al-Hurra
yeah.
drink, which is a combination of mint and green tea with ginger,
mm-hmm.
and then muddled orange and mint leaves together with a little bit of gin. Whoa, that was delicious.
I love that you have embraced, I personally have not embraced the gin yet. I don't dislike it anymore, but it is a neutral beverage to me now. And I like that you also have embraced gin and are putting it in more drinks to try. It's helping me become more of a gin person, excuse me.
Well, for me, and I think probably for you as well, right? The more that I experiment with gin drinks, the more I realize that there are things about gin I like. For me, if you're just going to do like a gin and tonic or something very similar like that, where it's only like a two ingredient, gin is pretty much the spirit and the main flavor. I still don't really enjoy those that much.
Me either.
But if you can add in other ingredients that kind of pluck out notes from the gin and highlight them in a way that, you know, I think for most people that don't like gin, it's like there's that heavy, that juniper flavor. It smells very piney. It's a lot if you're not into really herbaceous things. Being able to find those other notes within a gin and bring those to the forefront makes the whole thing a lot more fun.
It does, and it's making me enjoy it more. So thank you.
Yay. I will say this. I think I probably would have made more of those in the interim were it not for a time of year situation, right? That is a very good beverage for warmer months, and it's been getting colder, so I'm over here with my flips.
Right. No, I mean, it's like when I picked my beverages, I actually thought about it, but I intentionally tried to go seasonless. But there were some where they were just perfect summer drinks.
I was very pleased with our selection of drink options this season.
I did
too. There were a lot that I really labored over cutting and was like, oh, I'm sorry, my babies, as I kissed them goodbye and took them off the list. But we can't just rehash every single drink. So hopefully you, dear listener, found something in our drinks and stories that you enjoyed that you will take away from this season and keep with you. Thank you for joining us this season. We hope you will be here with us next season, because we are going to talk about the fate of those who practiced witchcraft and alchemy, or at least were accused of having done so. And the good news, as always, you do not have to wait. We are going to leave the high seas, put our ship in dry dock, and then go into our season of sorcery right away. That'll come up next week. And we're also going to talk about the punishments that witches and sorcerers have endured through time. Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.